It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. On Tuesday, September 15th at Heinz Hall, the legendary Rocky Blyer is performing a one-man show about his life with a portion of the proceeds benefiting Children's Hospital. The play was written by Post-Gazette sports columnist Gene Collier, co-author of The Chief, a play about Steelers founder Art Rooney. The play with Rocky Blyer, as it's called, looks at Mr. Blyer's multifaceted life as a four-time Super Bowl champion, wounded Vietnam warrior, family man, and community activist. Rocky Blyer will also kick off the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra's Neighborhood Week by hosting a salute to veterans at Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall in Oakland on Monday, August 31st. And he joins us now in studio. Rocky Blyer, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, thank you very much. It is just a busy week coming up.
I guess. It sounds like you have a lot on your plate. Also joining us is Gene Collier, author of the play with Rocky Blyer. Gene Collier, good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. If you have a comment or question for Rocky Blyer, if you want to ask him about his time in Vietnam, serving our country, his career with the Steelers, the Super Bowls, all that stuff, and the play as well, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Rocky Blyer, there's a lot to tell in a life story about you. And in the early 1980s, there was a TV movie made about your life. So what is making you want to bring your story to the stage and perform it yourself?
Well, I think you should ask Gene, because it was all his suggestion. I wanted to go in a whole different venue, different arena, but Gene reeled me back into reality.
What did you want to do?
Well, the start of the idea of getting to do this, actually, it's been a two-year process from the first start, and it was the beginning. It was in 13, and so the Gary Pomerantz's book came out, Their Life's Work, and so I read that, and it was great prose, and it was talking about the Steelers and development. There were some stories in there that I had never heard of, and then all of a sudden I got caught up with the idea of. Don't forget 40th anniversary of the Steelers, all the stories that have been told, the essence of that team, and so on. And I thought, well, what would it be like to be able to tell those stories from somebody who's behind the scenes or had been there from a player's point of view? So that was my idea, and I get some encouragement. So, you get a little more gumption, and so you get some ideas. And then eventually I brought Gene in and asked him if he would, you know, help with this project. And he goes, yeah, I think we should go in a whole different way.
Well, yeah, so,
what happened, Gene?
Yeah. So, in other words, it's going to all be on me.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. No, Rocky had a good idea. And I got the call actually from Thomas Tull, who's, part owner of the Steelers and, you know, has come up with a few decent films of his day, Godzilla, The Dark Knight Rises. Well, he won't name them all. But he said, you should call Rocky Blyer. He's got an idea. And so I did. And Rocky did have a good idea. And it is as he described it. And certain of the stories that Rocky had that he wanted to tell have made it into the play. They're in there, and they're good.
Right.
But as I looked at it, and as I talked to some other people about it, you know, it just became clearer to me that, you know, the best story Rocky has is his own. And now it's been 40 years since people really paid attention to it. There's a whole generation of Pittsburghers who aren't really that familiar with it. And to me, it's much more compelling, particularly as theater, than some of the other ideas that he had. So, you know, if he wants to blame me for it,
no,
that's perfectly fine.
And he'll get all the praise for it, all the successes of it too. And it's not, but that's how it came about. And so we spent time, you know, talking about the story. And I think, as Gene had made mention, from a theater point of view, it's not as if I'm giving a speech. It's not as if I'm just standing there. I mean, this is a theater production, and because of Gene's experience experience in writing plays, and especially from The Chief and that success, it melds together in a whole different way than if I would just stand there and go back to Appleton and start telling you my life story.
Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah. So, and the themes, and we have underlying themes and that are very prevalent today, and were a very big part of my life, and that I had never expressed before. But Gene was able to bring those out, and it becomes a predominant underlying theme of attaching all the stories, you know. And I tell people, what is it like? I said, well, it's your story. They go, it's your story. Well, it should be very easy for you. I said, well, that's
but you're
true.
Having to memorize lines that Gene wrote.
I said, yeah. Did you see the movie Pulp Fiction? I said, you know, you start here, and then all of a sudden you're over here, and then it all connects somewhere down the end, and so that's the kind of uniqueness that a writer like Gene brings to the theater, and then having the people to be able to bring it alive, of course, as you know, Paul, and doing theater is that becomes the essence, and so it's a new venue for me. That's how come we got it started. That was the idea behind it, and Gene is, you know, I have to say this, not because Gene's here, but the more I read this, the more I work on the lines, the more I work on this on an individual basis, I'm going, I don't know how Gene captured the essence of all my feelings and my story within that period. Of right, it's taken me, you know, months to get to that realization of saying, oh, that's what he meant. That's what it's saying, and that's what I felt at that time. And it really has hit home with me on that aspect.
Well, Gene, take us inside that process of understanding, you know, what's going through a person's mind as they face death, as Rocky did in Vietnam, as they face. As other Vietnam famous war veterans like Jimmy Stewart, for example, had to resume his acting career after flying combat missions in World War II. His first post-war film was It's a Wonderful Life, and he wasn't sure he could do it anymore. And I'm sure that, you know, Rocky had to overcome some of those doubts. So how do you get inside the head of the character, who is a real live person, not someone that you're inventing from your imagination, and understand what they're going through in order to put it on paper and make it a compelling play?
Yeah, this is one of the real pleasures I've had in doing this. You know, from time to time I've talked to veterans, and I'm always fascinated by them and what they've done for this country. I remember talking one time to a guy who had been at Normandy and a guy who had driven the Jeep for General Patton, and but this was my first opportunity to really talk at length about combat, about Vietnam, about all the lessons unlearned from Vietnam. And it's been a great pleasure. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people that you could elicit such genuine feelings from as you can with Rocky Blyer, because, you know, he is, Paul, you're from a mid-American kind of background too. You know, there's just a certain genuineness about him, a humility about him that you can tell right away that what he's telling you, he's really feeling, and none of it is any kind of affectation. And that's a great thing for a writer to be able to work with. You don't have to chop any weeds, if you will, allow that metaphor. I mean, you're getting, you know, exactly what you want, and it's up to you not to screw it up.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Rocky Blyer and sports writer Gene Collier about the play with Rocky Blyer, starring Rocky Blyer, about his life story, and written by Gene Collier. You can join the conversation with a question or comment at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Rocky, this is, of course, the 40th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. There may be any number of historic events and dates that would trigger your memories of a very difficult experience. Is it tough to relive some of what is being told in this story, particularly what you went through in Vietnam?
No, not for me. You know, I think one of the things was that when I came back from Vietnam, I came back into a high-profile business that was to try to make the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so it became a story. And because it became a story, I got it somewhat of a catharsis of being able to tell the story. I mean, the questions were asked of me, well, how did you feel? You know, what was your reaction? What's war really like as compared to playing? You know, those kinds of questions that, and I have to say this in all honesty, that I believe no other Vietnam veteran were asked at the time. Because as we remember, or for those who lived through that period of time, I mean, that veteran who was coming back had no option to be able to talk about his experience or what he felt.
Because of the way people were divided over the war.
That's right. Because the soldier was attached to the conflict. No one liked the conflict, so no one liked the soldier. So that Vietnam veteran came back and had to suppress his feelings, had to suppress the fact that he was a soldier. And many stories have been, you know, the fact that he was spat upon going back to college, that whole movement that was taking place. So, as I said, you know, I dealt with it early, and it was somewhat of a catharsis to go through that. So I never really had any flashbacks or problems. Now, the other thing, too, is that I was in country 4.5 months. It wasn't as if I was in country for a year or going back, as we do today, on three tours or four tours. And
you got hurt. You were drafted in December of 1968 when you were with the Steelers. Then you got hurt on August 20th, 1969. So you get hurt, and it was serious, so they got to get you out of there.
That's right. And so, you know, I'm out of there. I go to ultimately, I fly to Tokyo, spend 3 weeks there before I come back to the States. I come back to an Army hospital. I spent 9 months in that Army hospital facility at Fort Riley, Kansas. And then I'm out of the service, and I'm back with the Steelers.
You received wounds from both rifle fire and grenade fragments in your legs. Your right leg was especially bad. What was going through your mind as that was happening?
The things that go through your mind at that time aren't, and I have to say this, aren't really any different than what goes through your mind in any emergency at the moment. You know, so you react to the circumstances, you react to the situation, whether it be in a car accident, or whether it be, you fall down and you might hurt yourself, or it's a football injury and all of a sudden your knee's wobbling and that doesn't feel. So at that time you go, oh, okay, boom. You know, what's the immediate situation? Or they're firing at you. The immediate situation is to fire back at the enemy. You're in this circumstances. Hopefully you get out. You just try to defend yourself at that moment in time. And you don't know what's going to happen in the next minute or 5 minutes or 10 minutes. You live in that moment. And you don't think about, you know, anything. I don't think about football. I don't think about, you know, home. I think about that moment, trying to survive, reacting to the circumstance or to the situation. And I think we do that as human beings. And then ultimately, later on, we look at it, and then we create a memory, then we create a story, then we create reasons why it happened, and we try to justify those reasons. And so one of the underlying themes that we talk about is the randomness of life, that it happens. Life happens. There's no reason why it happens. We, as human beings, like to put a reason on. Well, there's a reason for that. No, there isn't. It happens. And I think the reason comes out of how you react to the situation. The situation happens, not for a reason. It's what you make out of that situation that defines who you are later on in life. So I don't think people think about that respect.
And you were in a difficult situation, and they're trying to get you out of there. And you're waiting. And finally, a soldier picks you up, puts you over his shoulder, and carries you out. It's an incredible story.
Well, you know, and what makes it incredible is that, all right, it's 1969. Okay, and you know, and what we have to think about is that period of time in the 60s, the desegregation was just taking place, civil rights movement was happening, there was this upheaval of blacks and whites and mix, and you know, that was taking place within our culture, and so you know, and so in this in this part of my life is that you know the soldier who happens to. They drag me out, and they take me as far as they can, and they're beat, they're tired, and they leave me, and they say, "We'll send somebody back, you know, to get you." And ultimately, you know, as we say in the play, but in actuality, you know, two black hands reached down, pulled me up, threw me over his shoulder, and took me all the way to the helicopter.
Now, a black soldier.
And was a black soldier. So it was a black soldier. But at the moment, you don't make a distinction because it becomes a brotherhood of fighting. That becomes the context. You're just a human being in those circumstances. But as it plays out in the mix of that period of time, you know, it might not have something been something that would happen here, you know, within a social circumstances. But in that conflict, at that moment, you're just two human beings. And we talk about that, and we talk about that difference. And I never knew who he was to this day.
You've never heard from him?
Never. Oh, you know, it was a matter of, didn't know where he came from, you know, didn't know his name. And so that is just a moment of time that, you know, that you react to. But something happens to you, and it's just the circumstances that makes it unique that Gene was really able to develop and bring out.
You were taken to Tokyo, and a doctor told you that you wouldn't have the strength and the flexibility, given the damage that was done, to be a running back in the NFL. So how were you able to come back and play? That's the other big question. I mean, one of the stories that stands out for me is that the Steelers brought you to Pitt Stadium in 1969, and had a salute to you and a tribute to you, and then they're thinking that the organization is thinking, we're never going to see this guy again.
No, you know, that's not, it was not a salute to me, and I just have to correct that. It happened to be Alumni Day for the Steelers, and I happened to come back, you know, at that time.
Really?
And so they said, oh, you know, why don't you just, you know, come on the side. And so,
it wasn't planned for
you? No, it wasn't planned for me. I just happened to be there. So they introduced the alumni, you know, that were there on the field that day. And so I think the game was against the Washington Redskins, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so I walked across, you know, the field, you know, with a cane, which I was walking with at that time. And so, and then they're, and then all of a sudden, I people that to this day come up and say, "Well, I was there at that, you know, at that time when you came back and I saw that." So it wasn't necessarily, you know, a special day for me. But what the question you ask is, how did you come back? Yeah, the doctor said, you know, the doctor said, no, you won't be able to play, given from his point of view, his diagnosis of the injury when I asked him the question. But I said, well, what do doctors know? You know, in all honesty, you know, what do doctors know? My point of view was that as an athlete, yeah, you get hurt. You get hurt. You have different injuries. In life, we have injuries. As we grow up, we, you know, bumps, bruises. We have sprains. We have, you know, broken fingers or whatever might happen along the way. And what do you learn? You learn a certain lesson. That lesson is, well, in time, that injury kind of heals, and you go back and play. You go back on the backyard, you play organized sports, and you go. So it's what you want to believe.
You're making it sound a lot simpler than
But it is as simple as that. And
it
so
really is?
It was as simple as that. So it's not as if I lost a leg or a foot or an arm damage. I've been done that before. There's no reason. So you just kind of go back. You go back and you start over, and you go back to the basics, and you go back to running, you go back to training. And part of that, at least for me, was that there was some comfortable feeling in just going back, you know, not having to worry about whatever else is out there. And you then have to let the chips fall where they may. It's not my decision whether I can, you know, make this team or not. It's just the opportunity that exists itself, but you got to be in that position to want to come back and to do that.
And you clearly did, and you did, and you were part of what ended up being four Super Bowl championship teams. We have Donald from McKeesport on the line who wants to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Donald, welcome. You're on with Rocky Blyer and Gene Collier.
Well, thank you so much. And Rocky, on behalf of all the Vietnam veterans who you inspired, trust me, you really inspired us, Rocky, when you come back. No one gave us any credit, but you helped us all the way through that. So please excuse me.
No, that's all right.
It's all right, Donald.
Thank you so much, Rock. Oh. You hang in there, buddy. We're going to look for you coming down the road.
All right.
Thank
Donald, thanks for the call. But it brings up a big point because of what I had said before is that there was no recognition. That soldier who came back wasn't ever recognized, ever thanked for his contribution to this country, not to the war in Vietnam, but the fact that he served, the fact that he put his time. Anything could have happened over there. And so it really wasn't until the last 20 years. And even that, you know, they came back to repress that feelings. They went back to school. They raised a family. They dealt with their own issues. And there was, you know, there was no outside help to be able to do it. They became homeless. They lost jobs. They had post-traumatic stress, which was not a disorder at that time. Agent Orange was a big factor that nobody recognized through that period of time. And so to some degree, you know, because I came back to a high-profile business because I was recognized as a Vietnam veteran, and because we then went and had the success in being part of that team to win those Super Bowls, is that, you know, I became somewhat of a poster child, you know, for the Vietnam veteran, and even to this day, I stand very proudly that to all my brethren out there that, you know, that I had served our country and was proud to be a Vietnam veteran.
And clearly it means a lot to people like Donald who
sure.
just called in. And so, Gene, this speaks to the material that you're working with. I mean, this story, obviously, it needs a skilled writer's hand, but you're also, in many ways, this story tells itself, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it is a tremendously compelling story. And as Rocky points out, it's not just from his perspective. It's from the perspective of all these people who, you know, most of the people who went to Vietnam were certainly not there by choice. You know, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which go on interminably, never would have started had there been a draft in place. So it's a completely, completely different circumstance. Paul, you mentioned earlier this summer, you know, the 70th anniversary of VJ Day, VE Day. You look at the back of the pictures from the end of those wars, people kissing each other in Times Square. That was not really the Vietnam veterans' experience.
At all.
No.
So it's, you know, it's so many ways, it's just a heartbreaking story, the whole Vietnam arc. And, you know, it was a real challenge and a real pleasure to be able to kind of delve into it through Rocky.
So we've got a couple of minutes left, fellas. Rocky, one of the things that I'm very curious about, and I don't want to plant any seeds of doubt here, but are you a little bit nervous about about taking the stage? Gene's saying that.
It's easy for Gene to say that because
he's not
standing
in
front of it. You know? Oh, he can say, yeah, he really screwed up my words. You know? And I really had a wonderful script. But
until Rocky messed it up.
I'm trying to downplay it. I mean, you won't believe how nervous I'll be.
But I do have to say, yes, I mean, it's a brand new venue that I've never experienced in this form before. And, you know, and so you're kind of out there. It's all you. There's no interaction of other actors, and not to take anything away from it, but it's yeah. And so, yes, I'm very nervous, and to learn to play. And so, you know, Gene just gave me, you know, 50 pages to memorize, and so I go, okay, fine.
It's you've got about a month here. You should be all right with that. Gene, are you directing this as well?
No, we are blessed that I am not directing, but we have a great director in Scott Wise, a great producer in Dan Fallon, and such a good technical staff from one end of the artistic spectrum to the other. We have the one and only Ann Mundell, who designed the set for The Chief and teaches set design at Carnegie Mellon. I mean, we've really been
You know, really, so hey, that's that a, and I was thinking this, you know, yeah, my supporting cast is going to be that stage, you know,
yeah,
and what they can do and how they bring it alive with the lighting and everything else that goes with it. So we start rehearsals coming up, and I, in all honesty, I can't wait to go through those rehearsals, just be able to see how it's all going to work out and solve the plan from that aspect of it. So that's really that, and that's terrific. So I know that we're coming to it. It's come to a busy time.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And so
you want to mention the salute to veterans?
Oh yes, I want to mention. We were talking about the veterans, and so the week of August 31st, that whole week is Neighborhood Week for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Now, how does this tie into what we're doing at this moment in time? Well, on August 31st, which is a Monday night, there's a salute to veterans at Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall, where the symphony is going to be there. I'm going to host that that concert that night, but they're going to be at five different locations throughout that week. But we start Monday night at Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall. Lawrence Lowe is the conductor, and we're going to have an interaction in between. I'll be introducing the pieces. We'll talk to some of the artists that were there and how they got involved. And so I'm looking forward to that. I just want to put it out there to all the veterans to take a look.
Yeah, Monday, August 31st at Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall, the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra's Salute to Veterans with Rocky Blyer, who is starring in the play with Rocky Blyer, September 15th at Heinz Hall, written by Gene Collier. Gene Collier, Rocky Blyer, thanks so much for being our guest on Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
Coming up, we'll look at why Pennsylvania doesn't have a state fair. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.